Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We never got past the title Hose on Hardcore.
Renee, today on the podcast we have one of my favorites, one of your favorites, and most importantly, you went on Twitter and solicited who our podcast listeners would like to hear from, Mary Carillo.
Yeah, it was amazing. When we asked everyone, who do you want to hear from? And we still want to hear those, so keep them coming. But Mary Carillo was the number one person that people wanted to hear from. And I think the reason that people wanted to hear from her is exactly what you're going to get today. Stories about tennis. She'll tell you this story about Billie Jean King at Wimbledon that will just, I mean, it had us in tears because it's so funny. And it also just depicts her as a human being, that she loves the game of tennis so much, but her passion to make things fun and informative and, you know, just, I mean, she's truly is my champion when it comes to media and who I want to emulate. She's liked by everybody. She's admired by everyone and respected by everyone out there on the tour. And I love her so much. And she's, the reason I'm doing television is because of Mary Carillo. She pushed me to do the job. I mean, I can't even talk because I adore her so much.
Yeah, no, same goes here. I say it in the podcast, but it's true. I am a student of Mary Carillo's. I've watched what she's been doing for years. Her Olympics coverage is amazing. You are going to want to listen to this episode because I literally have told people the Billie Jean King story probably 4 times since I heard it, and you now get to do the same. So listen up to our episode with the one and only,
as I like to call her, Carillo.
So here's what I want to talk about. 3 things.
That's it?
Yeah.
Can they be yes and no answers?
Yes, I can.
All right. Well, my first answer is 12. All right, that's my first answer, no matter what your question
12.
Is. 12.
I like it.
And then sorghum. Mm. That was always a good answer, I thought, like in high school.
Like favorite additive, sorghum?
Sorghum.
Is this going to be a nightmare for me? Because I'm sitting in between two people that are way smarter than me.
Come on.
And way more well-read than me. So they're going to pull out questions, they're going to pull out words
this
and stories.
This is a Russian literature podcast, yeah, I didn't tell
that's
you
that. My point.
Dostoevsky or Nabokov? Where should we start?
This is my problem
Lolita
today.
Really overrated.
This is my problem today. I want to know how you got into broadcasting outside of, because what people don't realize about you is that you were a very good player in your own right. I have a photo
that's
to
That's a nice
prove
way
it.
To describe my pointy-headed career.
No, but I mean, a lot of people don't realize, you know, so there's a lot of people in broadcasting and they think they just, because you have this great broadcasting voice and sound, but I mean, what happened? I mean, I sort of know, but
yeah, so I was at the year-end championships used to be in New York at Madison Square Garden, and I was there one night, and of course, as Stubbsy knows, I will watch any tennis match. And so there were all these famous people that were getting interviewed in between matches. You know, Billie Jean was there, Virginia Wade lived in New York, she was there. All these. Now it's the end of the night, and there's one match left, and it's Tracy Austin against Yvonne Goolagong. I'm hanging around for that. And, of course, I've already blown the suds off a few. You know, I'm just hanging around, you know.
Meaning you've had a few drinks?
Just to be sociable, whatever. I was unemployed. I was there to watch tennis. And someone from the WTA, from Virginia Slims maybe, said, hey, they need somebody, they need to get an interview for this, you know. And so I said, sure. And I started talking about why I think this is going to be a great match. By the way, it was 7-6, 7-6, Tracy Austin.
Wow.
And what happened is after they interviewed me, the two guys who were calling it for Madison Square Garden Network, one of them was Bill Talbert, who said, why don't we let her sit in on the call? They didn't even give me a headset. They gave me they put a microphone in front of me, and I just started talking about this match.
Wait a second. But
that was the first time I was ever on TV.
Did they know you were capable? Did they know? Like, did they just like, hey, you?
Did they know what they were getting?
Did they know what they were getting into? Absolutely not. No, I mean, I'd
3 hours later, the batteries ran out of the microphone. They decided,
they said,
I
think she should be on
and
TV.
There was a guy from USA Network named Mark Stolberger who heard me that night. And half a year later, this was 1980, so Wimbledon was my last first round loss ever. lost to Pam Teeguarden.
You could have just said your last match.
My last loss, I lost in about 14 minutes over on court 427. I knew I had to stop playing. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And this guy who had seen me that night at Madison Square Garden said, hey, USA Network's going to start doing some tennis matches. You know, do you feel like doing some? So I did a couple. And it wasn't a real career. I had knee surgery again. I was teaching tennis, whatever. And then it got to be more the next year. And then eventually they put me on men's tennis. And then there we go. All of a sudden I had something I could do. But so it was a very fortuitous, it was very lucky. It was very haphazard. Pretty random when you look back.
Renee, because as you know, she's demure, she's a wallflower,
yes.
We call her retiring, you know, she's
yes.
She's very quiet, doesn't share opinions. So she
Wait, do you call her Renee?
I don't call her Stubbsy.
You don't call her Stubbsy?
No, I don't believe in nicknames, Mary.
Wow.
Why is that? Can I ask?
I don't know, I'm Canadian. I like giving people their actual name. Hi, Mary. Hi, Renee Stubbs.
Oh, see, I call Canada America Light.
No, we call it America's Hat.
Right. America's Hat. Oh, so you do believe in country nicknames?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine.
It's just
I love Canada.
Me too. It's a great place.
But before, I want you to answer a question,
you
but can I tell you that Stubbsy and I were doing the Olympics, Rio. I was in Rio. She was in Stamford, Connecticut. Somehow we made that work. We're calling a match. And so first up, whatever, I say, so it's Angelique Kerber against, you know, Monica Puig. So Stubbsy, and all of a sudden in my ear, someone yells, it's Renee. And I'm like, who the hell's Renee?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever call
you. No, actually, it started in London when they told you when we were doing the final here in London for NBC. And we had Sharapova, Serena,
oh, that's right.
And they said to Mary before the
that's
match
right.
started, they said, now listen, Mary, it's the final. We need you to call Renee, and not Stubbsy. And so we started it. The camera came
just
on.
Have it written on your hand.
You know, we had the dun, 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 the music. Everything was great. And then Renee, this
anthem.
And that. By the third, yeah, sorry. What's the NBC?
We got that big lush.
Yeah, what
grand.
Is it? Sing it for me.
But did I call you Stubbsy?
Oh, there you go. You got
you.
It. You got
yeah.
it. Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
For the first three games, it's Renee and it's Renee. By the third, about the middle of the third game, it was all gone. Stubbsy was back into the mix, and NBC just thought there's just absolutely no point in me trying to tell Mary what
while
to
we're
do.
But we
about
digress. What was the question you were trying to
well,
ask?
Well, there's a couple questions I want to ask. But while we're on the subject of the Olympics,
yes.
Badminton, the rant,
Classic.
The rant. Classic.
The rant.
Slightly less known, but my personal favorite, you making egg bread in Sochi with Maria Sharapova.
That was terrific.
How did this
that
come
That was
about?
Terrific.
What's our next? When can we expect our next? The French Open accordion music when you're comparing Francesca Schiavone to a painter. I mean, I'm a student
wow.
of yours, Mary Carillo.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Like where?
That's fun stuff. I like doing that.
Talk me through the balance of... When do they say that's too crazy and you can't do it, and when do you just insist anyway?
Well,
I say both.
I have no real juice. I mean, my the power I have is minimal. I'd like to think I have influence every now and then, but you know, sometimes you can sell an idea, and
yes.
they're not always my ideas anyway. I played croquet here.
Most are all your ideas.
But the wackadoodle ones tend to come out of my head, maybe, but...
Okay. Chicks on Bricks didn't last long.
So here's what happened.
Yeah,
so,
tell me.
So we were working together, Stubbsy and me, on Tennis Channel, and so I wanted to do a bunch of stuff with her, and so they allowed us to do something called Chicks on Bricks for the French Open. It was outstanding. And then we came here to Wimbledon, and we did Babes on Blades.
We did
a couple
Blades.
Of Babes. And then it was all over. I think one of the reasons, Stubbsy, is because... For the U.S. Open, I think we never got past the title Hose on Hard Courts.
Yeah, that was the biggest problem. We couldn't get that cleared with either the USDA or with Tennis Channel. And then so...
Yeah, can we bring it back for the podcast? The whole point of a podcast is you can do dumb shit like this.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's see how people respond to it on Twitter and bring on hose on hard courts.
Well, what I was going to say before we got into the Olympics is Renee tweeted, who do you want to hear from? And the answers really ranged. Obviously, the greats, blah, blah, blah. Umpires, the single most popular response, Mary Curlow.
Oh, that's nice to know.
It was, because I think they realize that you've been reined in on television, and in a podcast, you're allowed to do whatever the F you want, Mary.
I see.
And say, and come up with some great ideas. If you had one choice to do here, because we're in London, we're at Wimbledon, we're on the grounds actually here.
On the roof of the media center.
On the roof of the media center.
Overlooking.
If there was one thing that you could do, that you were allowed to do here at Wimbledon, what would you do?
No, well, do you know what I did? And it never aired.
Oh, you did?
It got censored. It never aired.
Too hot for TV.
So you see those two towers there?
Yeah.
As you know...
buildings behind Court 18.
Right off of Henman Hill is where I've been staying for many years with Billie Jean King and Alana Clause.
Just a gal's roommate?
It's outstanding.
Trio? Yeah.
It's outstanding. And it's very convenient. You just kind of roll down the hill in the morning and you're at work, which I've done once or twice. Anyway... So I was working for TNT, HBO. I had been covering Wimbledon for HBO Sports, and then they lost their contract. TNT picked it up for 3 years, and I said to them, "I've got this great idea. We show Billie Jean King, because we had a balcony right off of that building." I said, "How about we get Billie Jean King egging Henman Hill?" So of course Billie Jean said yes.
Yes, of course.
And we shot it. We were right here. We shot it.
That film exists somewhere.
That film exists somewhere. And the beautiful thing is, I'm like on a walkie-talkie talking to Billie Jean.
Go.
And I'm saying, all right, Billie. And she has a bowl of eggs, okay? And the idea was that she was going to throw them and obviously not aim at Henman Hill. But then I was going to edit it and shoot people getting hit by eggs, right?
Yeah. There. Although... I mean, depending on how
good her arm
is.
Exactly right.
She could maybe get
it. Could have happened. This was comedy gold, Caitlin, okay? And I'm saying to Billy, I'm on a walkie-talkie talking to Billy. I said, all right, Billy, make it look like you're warming up. And here's Billie Jean King, who's won 20 Wimbledon titles.
The most of anyone.
Doing arm farts. Wait, like she's going. So anyway, so I got this whole thing going, and I've got a crew, and I bring it back. We can't air that.
What?
Oh.
This is an Emmy. Daytime Emmy. Special.
Why?
This is crackling good television.
But why? They just said it just...
They thought I was clinically insane. I think that was part of it.
Yeah, but
yeah,
who cares?
But Billie Jean
You're
King went along with it. That was the great glory of it all.
Well, it's interesting because I sat down with Alana, her partner of a long time, and the CEO currently outgoing of World Team Tennis. And, you know, we were talking about, the 75th birthday is coming up. Let's do something incredible to celebrate.
Very nice.
I'm a recipient of Title IX. I'm a child of Title IX.
Exactly.
Journalism degree paid for by a tennis scholarship because of her.
Correct.
Like, I get tears thinking about it, truly.
I know.
But, you know, she's talking to me about how we have to get her out of the amber, right?
Yes.
People my age and younger, I'm 37, only remember her. Is this legend? Is this statue? Is this thing? And, you know, the balcony and the waving.
Yeah.
Why the fuck can't we show her throwing eggs?
Yeah. I mean, that would bring her the
hipsters. Arm farts.
And the arm farts.
I'm telling you what, I brought back what we had already shot. And
we
then
need
we need
to find that.
I know. These are like the
we
lost
need to find
basement
tapes.
Is there
some, like, is there some AV club?
Is it a TNT?
I would love
it.
It was
TNT.
And we didn't, they stopped me. Once I got Billy doing the whole thing with the eggs and the thing and the warming. And then they said, we can't. I think they were afraid. TNT was new to the All England Club. The great.
God, pity Channel 7 haven't got that film. We could show it this year because we're gone after this year.
The great Bette Midler once said, I have standards. They're low, but I have them. At the All England Club, the standards are high.
Yes, and TNT's, they didn't want to upset the...
I get it. I get it. I just feel it was a real lost. It was a lost moment
it is my,
in time.
It is my objective to
we
find
have
that film.
To, we have to find
somewhere.
That somewhere in a vault. One of the... My favorite things you've done recently, HBO Sports, Margaret Court, serious for a second.
Mm.
As a gay person, me, I'm watching that thinking, you... gave her a very fair shake.
I had to. I mean, when I asked to do the piece, the executive producer of Real Sports, a brilliant fellow named Joe Persky, he said, Mary, you know we don't do agenda journalism. Because obviously he had an inkling of where I landed on this thing. And I said, I promise you it will be balanced. And we spent a week in Perth, Australia, with Margaret. And I was actually there when we shot this I was there on the day that gay marriage passed in Australia.
Wow.
And I said to Margaret, how do you feel about this? Because I knew how she felt about it. I said, are you surprised by this? I think that was my question. And she said, I am, because I know that I am part of the silent majority. Mm-hmm. And when I brought that to, I only interviewed three people. I interviewed Margaret, Billie Jean King, and Martina.
And no big deal.
And when I said to Martina, she said she's part of the silent majority. Martina, of course, said the majority is never silent.
Yeah. That's a very, very interesting counterpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the great thing about that in Australia, actually, was for me, obviously, being Australian and having to sort of get a few questions and knowing that I was gay. You know, I always go to Billy. I often go to you, Mary, because you're sort of my, I don't know,
Guru,
calm me down. No, Mary's actually...
Well, Billy's my touchstone.
Well, and Mary's often mine as far as, you know, she's been my biggest champion as far as getting into media. But I asked Billy, I said, well, you know, I sort of wanted to know what Billy said about that. And Billy's reaction was, if you get your name put on anything, and hers was, of course, the USTA National, Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. And Margaret has a name. She said, if you have your name on anything...
Margaret Cordarina at Melbourne Park.
Yes. Yeah. You have to understand that there are people coming into that arena, into that court, that are not like you. And you have to be accepting of everybody. And that to me, was the best answer that I heard on that, was from Billie Jean.
Well, when the USA National Tennis Center named it after Billie Jean, remember that great moment where she said, mi casa es
su casa. Yeah.
But I don't know if I told you this story, but the day before the Australian... Craig Tiley, the tournament director, refused to talk to us. We tried multiple times.
Which is unusual, because I'll give Craig a lot of credit.
I was very disappointed in him. I'm sure there are things to give him credit for, but I think he should have spoken to us. Anyway, but Craig, listen to this. So the day before the Australian started this year, I saw Casey DeLacqua.
Australian player who's gay.
Openly gay.
With two children.
Who's been criticized by Margaret Court.
And let's just say for the record, Margaret Court is not... shy and retiring in her opinions. It's not like, I mean, she leads a congregation, she writes op-eds, and most sort of incendiary was the op-ed where she wrote about gay people having children. And again, like, I'm not an agenda journalist either, but that felt like it was open season after that.
Right. I mean, she and Mike Pence fall in line, our vice president fall in line in a lot of important ways that could be difficult for someone like me. Anyway, so I see Case, and she's playing doubles and mixed doubles at the Australian, and she still can play, obviously. She was playing with Ash Barty, and she was playing mixed with John Peers. So you know they're going to get on some show courts.
Oh, yeah.
And so I saw her, and I told her that I was doing this story about Margaret Court, and I told her that I'd been in Perth. And she'd spent a lot of time as a kid with Margaret. Helped her
she's
game.
She's from Perth.
Wow. She's from Perth. So she said, Craig Tiley talked to me this morning, and he said, look, I agree with you, Case, but it's a lot harder to take a name off of an arena than to put it on. That's what he told her. And I said, well, all right. I said, but Case, there was no way they would put you on Margaret Court Arena. And here's how cool Casey DeLacqua is. She said, I want to play on Margaret Court Arena.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to walk on that court mm-hmm. in front of my friends and my family and my fans to let them know I belong here.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
How cool is that?
Well, now I'm going to cry again.
All we do is cry here at Wimbledon with Caitlin. That's all she does. Just,
who knew, you guys? This tough exterior, but...
Yeah, exactly. We've cracked you open like a walnut.
So
anyway, it's interesting.
But the last thing I'll add,
yes.
And again, my intention is not piling on because it's kind of an easy target. But I mean, Margaret Court was also on the side of apartheid.
Correct. Correct. This back in the day, she thought that she made a statement when Arthur Ashe had gone to South Africa, and his point was, and there were plenty of blacks who didn't want him to go there.
Sure.
And he went anyway because he said he wanted to walk among young black kids and let them know that people like him. Were around, exactly.
Yeah. And belonged, very
and,
similar.
And Margaret, back in the day, and look, I have a deep respect for Margaret. She's one of my heroes growing up.
Of course.
Margaret Court, are you kidding me?
Yeah, me too.
But she, back then, she said she thought South Africa got it right with apartheid.
Right. You know?
I mean, so that this is a woman, look, and a lot of people have, you know, single issue, alt-right people, you know, they're either anti-abortion or anti-gay, and so that's why, and it explains why they could support someone like Donald Trump.
Right. Who doesn't seem to share other values, but for them...
For them, that's all they care about. A lot of them just care about one thing or two things.
Yeah, so everything else doesn't matter.
And everything else they can...
I get it.
Yeah, right?
I don't personally agree with it, but I get it. We talk a little bit about, you know, records and Serena, and obviously Serena Williams going for a 24 is you know, hugely momentous. Don't you feel, I grew up with Steffi being the all-time greatest Grand Slam champion at 22. Do you feel like the goalposts moved a little bit for Serena? Is there a racial thing going on there? Because honestly, when I was a kid, it did not matter. Margaret Court was not part of the conversation, not in any sort of diminishing way. It was just seen as a different thing.
Right.
You know, the Australian Opens that she racked up came at a time when people, you know, I'm not sure planes flew that far. So not that many people played it. So I'm just asking, because I feel like I should ask, and you seem like the best person I could possibly ask, short of maybe Margaret Court herself. Are the goalposts moving? Did they move? Did people all of a sudden think 24 was more important? Or was it just another thing that Serena could then conquer because we want her
well,
to be the greatest?
Well, I mean, look, no one's ever going to touch Margaret's Grand Slam record. She's got 62 titles. 64 if you count the fact that in two of them it got rained out, so they split the title. All right? So she played singles, doubles, and mixed doubles. No one is ever, no tennis player who plays now is ever going to play singles, doubles, and mixed and win as much as Margaret Court. So that's untouchable. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. And yes, she played at a time when a lot of players, the draws were soft because she played a lot of fellow wildies, whatever. But when people talk about Serena, you know, I think Serena's getting plenty of credit, frankly. And I think she's still got a couple more major wins in her.
How did you?
I mean, I'd be surprised if she didn't win more majors. I'm not convinced she can't win this. And we're only in the second round. So,
yeah.
But honestly, the greatest match player I ever saw, ever, was Monica Seles.
Monica Seles.
Yeah. Monica Seles was the greatest match player I ever... I thought she was going to be the greatest of all time.
Tell me what match player means, just in terms
just
of where
in
she
terms
could get
of,
herself.
She never took off one point.
Yeah.
She had an unbelievable ground game. She had an incredible mind.
Yep.
And she stopped with nine majors. She got one more after she got stamped.
Yeah.
And of course, Steffi Graf won a lot of majors in her absence that I'm going to assume Monica could have won. So I think she is lost in the mists of history more than just about anybody.
Interesting.
She
no
was
doubt.
A good, Caitlin here, and I love watching Serena play. I love watching her compete. Even when she's not playing well, she competes well. It's a lot of fun. But I used to do Monica Seles matches. I mean, I'm lucky.
We did her comeback match.
We did her, which was...
We did her comeback match.
We certainly did.
After the stabbing.
With ESPN in Canada.
Yep. It was a rotten match, unfortunately, for us, Stubbsy, because I think it was the first time we ever worked together.
Yeah.
And it was over in 12 minutes.
And it was over in about 12 minutes. She beat... No, that was the Mary Pierce.
No, that was Hingis. That was a Hingis match,
we're getting
right?
all crappy matches mixed up. We've had a few together.
We haven't had.
We do make crappy matches entertaining, though.
Well, we try. But all I'm saying is, when I would do a Monica Seles match, the first set stats would come up, and it would say 19 winners, one error for Monica Seles.
Yeah,
I mean, Serena can hit a lot of winners too.
Sure. No,
everybody get a lot of winners, but they also hit a lot of their.
Yeah. But
that was what was absolutely amazing about Seles, was how big she went on every shot she took.
Yeah.
And it was like Camilla Giorgi with no errors.
Yeah.
And the same scrunchie.
Well, hold on a second, though. tell me the where tennis lost out, because obviously you know through the periods of
because
years.
I'm elderly.
The great,
this
great
is about my dotage.
No, because I sat.
Let
through.
Me just note for the record: neither of these ladies I'm sitting next to looks a day over 40.
Thank you very much. I'm 61.
Thank you. Tell me how tennis lost one of the truly great rivalries, because I sat through a lot of those matches with Steffi and Monica when the stabbing happened. And
that was going to be amazing.
You know, 92. I was standing there the day that happened, actually.
Oh, you were there in Germany.
Yes, I was, playing doubles with Steffi in Hamburg when that happened. So that's a memory, a day I will never forget. I was a part of that. I spoke to Monica in the morning of that. We'll get into that at a different time, but on a different podcast. But Monica Seles, to me, like you said, Mary, one of the greatest, truly greatest matches I ever watched was the 92
French
Open final. And to me, Steffi was one of, if not the greatest match players I ever saw, as far as every point was next point.
Yeah.
And they never worried about that. Now when he went for the towel, I mean, watch that match.
Awesome.
No one went for a towel. No one took timeouts.
Stubbsy.
It was point by point. Tell me how great that rivalry was and what we missed out on.
That's what I'm saying. To me, that would have been right up there with Chrissy and Martina and Rafa and Roger. I just thought that was an absolutely tragic loss to us that got stopped. Can I tell you, though, I called a lot of Graf matches, and the
I loved how quickly she played, and no nonsense in between points. It gets to the point where we couldn't get in replays. she was like, give me the ball, give me the ball. Yeah. There was something awesome about it, but then she'd hit this ridiculously huge forehand with her feet flying out of her shoes, mm-hmm. and I'm there, we got to show that. We didn't have time.
We don't have time.
How great is that? Here's Rafa taking 40 seconds in between points
at
the French Open.
We're implementing a time clock in tennis to stop the Rafael Nadal's 40 seconds, and the Maria Sharapova's going back and fiddling with the strings and getting the towels and all this.
Yeah.
And back in Steffi and Monica's day,
you
couldn't get in a replay. So don't tell me you can't play quicker.
In all of your years of watching Steffi play, how many times did she come over her backhand?
Oh, she hit one to win a Grand Slam against Martina, I believe, at Wimbledon. She hit over her backhand when someone came into the net and she was under the pump, and I tell you, she very rarely missed it. She very rarely missed her over backhand.
But I loved her slice backhand.
But do you know how much of a nightmare her slice backhand would be in this day and age, with everyone's grips the way they are? Mm-hmm. Her slice would be a nightmare. There's a reason why Roberta Vinci could be top, 15 in the world, because no one sees a slice anymore.
Yeah, no.
It's underutilized shot.
It is.
Mary had one.
That's all I had.
Who was your favorite player other than you talk about Monica? Because, I mean, who's your favorite player to, first of all, commentate? Second of all, who is someone that you would like to see do really well now, that we could see more of?
I can't pick a favorite player, because normally it's the matchup that gets you
going,
right?
What's your favorite matchup, then? Let's go with that, because I feel the same way.
Well,
women's tennis, men's tennis.
Women's tennis matchup? I love power going up against variety. So give me that matchup any day of the week.
Yesterday, Osaka Niklescu.
How was it?
Amazing.
Tremendous, right?
Tremendous. You've got a 19-year-old, boss machine trying to hit 110 miles an hour in Osaka, and she's got slice forehands down the line to do it.
And then you've got Niklescu, who's just driving you nuts. The most annoying tennis player in the world to play against.
Yulia Putintseva, could I put in for her? And I love watching Putsi.
Yeah.
I watched her play last night.
She's nuts.
How annoying. She wins like 10-8 in the third matches and throws herself on the ground and is jumping up. Colossal pain in the keister.
Sure.
But plucky and annoying.
Cornet,
the drama queen. Yeah, we have a lot of those.
Can I tell you who I watched last year? Actually, just right down here. Georgie Cornet. You got the dad coughing during the serves. You got Alize.
Was he really coughing during the serves?
Yeah. Oh,
I know he was accused of that.
He was accused of it two matches later, doing it against Cornet.
Just hocking up loogies
You got Cornet appealing to the
Mary.
French Federation.
It's people, the Italians.
It's all about the matchups. Anybody who follows an individual player, sure, fine, have your favorites, but the matchups are really
Well, that's why we haven't had great Serena Venus matchups.
No.
And they're fraught anyway, obviously, because they're so close. And
playing your sister's got to be such a mind fuck.
That's got to be crazy.
Yeah, but Justine Anna, we had a whole story in the second or third issue about
loved watching her.
What it could have been,
Anna with
Serena.
Because those matches were compelling and they were close. And Anna got more than a few, which you can't really
say. She knocked out, I seem to remember a year where Anna beat Serena in like three straight Grand Slam quarterfinals.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that happened. That would have been great. And then
great
Justine went away.
Slice backhand.
Yeah.
Variety. Ability to come in. Variety is so important. Do you think variety will ever come back into tennis?
I do. I'm optimistic.
Okay.
I really am.
Why?
Because it's gotten to the point where you can it's why I love tennis. You can play any way. You can be short. You can be tall. You can be powerful. You can be handsy. You could be...
Let's not be handsy here.
Hands down.
They are down. They're under the table.
All right, very good. No, I mean, you can play any kind of game you want, and I would like to think that at a certain point, power does not dictate everything. And I think at a certain point, I think people will realize how beneficial it is to get to the net again.
Yeah.
I have a theory.
Tell me.
It's half-baked. Does that matter?
That's our favorite kind.
Most of.
My theory is that the two-handed backhand killed serve and volley tennis.
I agree.
Do you really?
Want to know something? I played college tennis D1 with two hands. A year ago, I switched to one. Just for fun.
And?
My game is, I'm in the net. She's played with me constantly. I just want to get in. And my grip's right there.
Yep.
And you see these young guys, we were just talking about Tsitsipas,
Love him.
you know, it's
Shapovalov.
One hand is coming back.
It is coming back. I'd like to see it more on the women's side. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
It's a little bit different. The problem with the women is they don't have the strength when they're kids.
But I think that's on coaches to say, stick with it. You're going to lose and get your ass kicked for a year. But when you finally figure it out, you're going to have that slice. You're going to have that
it's
coming over.
It's also
over.
A gay theory.
It's my gay theory. It's not a...
I mean, I don't want to put a blanket statement on because I don't want everyone out there freaking out. There's probably some parents out there that their daughter's going out hitting one hand and like, oh my God, she's gay.
They're like, it's just a phase.
But
it's just a phase.
Get the two-hander back, Mary.
Oh, and she's coming to the net too.
Oh, no.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, you were on one of my favorite podcasts, the No Challenges Remaining podcast, with Racket contributors Courtney Nguyen and Ben Rothenberg.
Yes,
and
I
you
like
had
them.
This incredible, and I think that this should be adopted maybe as like a political platform.
Tell me.
Serving and volleying as a... religion, as a political viewpoint. Serving and volleying as a...
How about a request for serving and volleying once every game as a must?
You can. No, that's... No, well, my whole point is you can play it any way you want. You can't make somebody serve and volley. My point is that... My point, I'm convinced I have one somewhere, is that... I'm a lefty. The late, great Harry Hopman coached me for many years, and his whole point was it's much... Under pressure, it's much easier to hit a volley than to pass. That made utter sense to me. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lefty serve and volley
game. Especially when you had your backhand.
And it was just pretty... No, it was my forehand that was even dodgier.
Oh, you and...
My forehand was just shocking.
You and Caitlin
shocking,
and me.
Shocking! But anyway, so the whole point was he would basically say, you take your lefty serve, you serve into their backhand, you come in, you pop, you knock off the volley. Hide your ground strokes at all costs.
Yeah.
Fine. And then two-handed backhands got big. And for so many players, their backhand is... That's the last place in the world you want to aim and try to get to net.
Yeah, especially in the women's game.
Yeah. Especially in the women's game.
Yeah.
And that, to me, has just kept so many people from wanting to come in. And I think that's a pity.
Yeah, it's a total pity.
Well, and also, let's not forget the speed of the courts. They've slowed them down a tremendous amount. I mean, look at Wimbledon here. You know, this year's going to play... It is playing, from what I've heard, faster... But the ball's bouncing higher. I mean, back in our day, Mary, we'd come in on a great slice backhand, and it would be...
I would come in on anything.
Well, me too. Hello. We'd talk about bluff. Jeez. Chip and bluff. Chip and charge and chip and hope. You know, but the ball stayed low, so you couldn't really generate. You had to still hit up over the net first. Which,
correct.
If you're at the net, it's a volley down. Nowadays, with the spin and the ball being high, the ball is actually getting below the net as a volleyer. Now, you have to be a defensive volleyer or hit a great volley. So... The court speed and the rackets and everything, that's changed the game.
But here's the other point, and I used to teach a lot. Now, every now and then, I'll give a clinic. But what I try to tell people is, especially with all the power in this game these days with men and women, you don't have to be a great volleyer. You have to be a good volleyer. So you come in, and so many people have such weight to their shots, approach shots, to get in. Like, I came in... on bluffs, so I actually had to be... My hands were the best part of my game. If I had a huge approach game, I would just need to be a serviceable volleyer.
Yeah.
Right?
Because you're just getting easy volleys.
And I watch so many of the men and the women, I'm thinking, how can you not come in on that?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh,
right?
Yeah, all
how can
that's
you
all
not
I do.
Come in?
That's all you and I do in the green room. Go in.
That's like
what are you doing?
Caroline
but they don't
match.
Go in
she'll
because
the
their volleys
line
are
backwards.
But you can. But again, they don't have. You don't have to be a great volleyer. At these days, with this game, with the power, you have to be.
Just
have to be a good volleyer.
just a smart
and ball. And especially with the way people can hit, it's a one volley deal. It's not like you're covering the, you know, it's not, you're not a goalkeeper. Hit one volley. Hit a huge shot and hit one volley.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Radwanska is a typical sort of, you know, she's got through her career really doing that. And she doesn't even come in on anything big. She just comes in and understands that this middle of the court is where people want to play on a big point. And somebody who I really always respected was Hingis.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch Hingis play big matches, and it cost her one slam, which I'll never tell her this story because she'll probably have nightmares about it. But she used to do what so many players should do, and some do, serve that flat wide serve on a big point, meaning set point, break point, match point. Because every single player is going to, most of the time, hit that return through the middle of the court, take away the line, take away the error, and they're going to go big through the middle, which is the right shot to hit under pressure. But if you're coming into the net, that's right at you as a volleyer.
Mm.
And she used to hit that flat, wide serve and come in and hit that inside-out little scooper volley into the open court, point over. And players would be like, where did that come from? And she only did it 5 or 6 times maximum a match, but she always did it on a big point.
She's smart.
And if she had done that against Jennifer Capriati at the Australian Open when she had her one match point, and Lisa Raymond and I were watching the match, and we said, here it comes. Here comes the flatty wide with the scoopy inside out back and volley.
Flatty scoopy.
The flatty scoop.
The 1-2 flatty scoopy.
And she didn't do it, and Jennifer's return landed a foot from the baseline, and she ended up getting behind in the point, and she lost the point, she lost the match. So that is the, if she'd done it on that point, she would have won. And this players need to develop that one or two times, and Radwanska does it from time to time.
Radwanska has some of the best hands in the game.
It's just great concept. Just, you know, great imagination.
Yeah.
I like players who actually, it's why I hate on-court coaching. That's an entirely different podcast. That would take 14 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, but give us a nutshell on why.
Because if you are not smart enough to win a match, I want you to lose it.
But
how's that?
Counterpoint.
is that
counterpoint.
I know you like on-court coaching.
I do, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me.
I want to watch the very best points.
I want to watch multimillionaires, the very best players in the world, figure out a way to win their own matches.
That's the most compelling argument I've ever heard. But don't you think?
Here's my argument for it.
When they look vulnerable and weepy, and you like that, I think that makes them look... the whole look of it is awful to me. The optics are terrible.
Talk about Putintseva.
Putsi
will give you some great volume on her. Have you seen her on-court coaching? Just go to YouTube.
Of course.
Type in Putintseva and just turn the volume up.
She's practically having a dialogue.
Here's my thing with on-court coaching.
Putintseva is a gift to the internet, first of all. We just say that.
It's not a gift, but for some it is. My thing with the on-court coaching is I didn't have a lot of power, but I had a brain.
Yeah.
Some players had unbelievable power.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a brain sometimes, not all the time.
You
but
can
on the
rub
court,
a couple
I had a brain.
Of cells together every now and then.
Couple.
I didn't have a lot of power, but I had a brain. And some players have all power.
So you're saying that
no
takes
brain.
Away the advantage.
It's taking away one advantage I had because you're using somebody else's brain to help you be better.
Yeah, I hate it.
You know, so when you come off the court, you go, you know, you actually could have hit this ball there and there. And they go, oh, really? Oh, that's right. Well, next time. Okay.
Or you do it before the match.
Yeah.
Here's what you should do.
But Hingis would have won that Grand Slam on a flatty scoopy.
Well, but she was smart enough to figure it out on her own.
There we go.
Which is why she won so much.
You're making a point
for
us.
With no weapon. With not one. Martina Hingis literally had not one weapon. She had an unbelievable, solid everything. And a great brain.
Well, let's reflect. My mind has been changed.
Has it really? Okay.
July 4th, 2018, the year of our Lord, on the roof. I now agree with you.
Independence Day.
Here's another thing I used to when I taught a couple of knees ago, when I could actually.
How many knees ago? 3-2.
They are. I'm riding on rims.
You're just cartilage.
I'm riding on rims.
You just hear it creaking.
Yeah, it's not pretty. Anyway, but what I would tell anybody about. And this is really globally in sports. The whole point is to put your opponent or the other team, if it's a team, in a state of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's what's great about sports. We've been watching World Cup here.
Mm-hmm.
You put them in... Okay, so how do you put the other side in a state of emergency? Mm-hmm. You can use power, or you can use guile, or you can, you rush them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You make them do things
or
that they're not...
Or you grind them down.
Or you grind them down.
You hallop them.
You disrupt their rhythm.
There are so many ways to do it, but that is the whole point. And if you are not clever enough,
smart enough, strong enough, patient enough.
Fit enough.
Fit enough to put the other person in a state of emergency.
You don't deserve one.
You're not supposed to win.
Okay.
The other team is supposed to win. The other player is supposed to win. That's my whole, that's what's great about sports,
and
right?
Here's what's great. Mary's in TV, and TV love it. That's why we won't ever get rid of it.
What?
On-court coaching, because TV love it.
Who says they love it?
A lot of people.
Okay, I'm going to say something controversial. I'm going to throw a bomb because I can.
Okay.
I'm talking to two veteran broadcasters, best in the biz. One of the things that I think us at home, plebes, like about on-court coaching is it's doing some of the work that some of the commentators should be doing, right?
Yes.
I hear a lot of color. I hear a lot of, oh, it's nerves. I hear a lot of, you know, da-da-da-da, graphics and the stuff. And don't get me wrong, it's nice, and I like it, and I watch the shit out of it.
Right.
Every streaming service you can imagine. That said, I love both of you guys, truly, because you are explaining to me things that I do not see. When somebody says, oh, Muguruza is well coached at this Wimbledon final against Venus because she is using this tactic, and watch her to do this cross-court backhand.
Isn't that great?
I'm thinking, I'm playing the Grass Court Nationals at Westside Tennis Club next week, and I'm going to be hitting on grass against some really, really good players, and I got a six-foot partner. What do I need to do? How can I translate that into something that means something to me?
Yes.
Not just, oh, she's pretty nervy, huh? And so to me, if you get rid of on-court coaching, which I'm now convinced maybe we can do it, then what needs to happen from a spectator, from a plebe's point of view, is we need more tactics. Talk to us like we're smart.
Exactly.
And if we're not smart enough, we'll get there. We'll learn.
Yes.
Every other sport, you know, football, they want to tell you, well, look for this route and that, you know, and da-da-da-da. In tennis, it's you're dumbing it down to the middle. And I don't say you two specifically.
Yes.
It's not you two.
Sadly, some
rant over.
Sadly, some networks. Sadly, some networks that I've worked for will say, we're not catering to smart tennis fans. We are catering to an overall audience. So don't talk to them like they're really tennis-centric fans and understand tennis.
Mm-hmm.
So we do get a broad, I mean, I would say NBC would be a bit more broad. Channel 7, be a little bit more broad. Tennis Channel, ESPN Tennis, go for it, man. Get the skills. Get the this, get it all in there. So it depends on what network you work for,
of course.
Yep.
I mean, okay, so Mary, you also work for HBO.
I do.
These great, one of my great, best shows on television is Real Sports. Favorite story from there that you can...
That play? I've done or that the show has done?
Because
the show has done
you?
Far more. That, I mean, I've been on it for over 20 years.
I know.
I'm elderly. I keep telling you. I tend to do the profile stories, you know, which are lovely, and I've been lucky enough to meet all kinds of tremendous athletes. But the show itself, they can, you know, they follow, you know, they'll go after the great thing about HBO is they have boxing, but that's all they've got.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any other sports. They don't have the rights to any other sports. They don't have to protect
their
relationship with the NFL or the
NBA
or the NCAA or the IOC. So we get to cover the waterfront and tell those kind of stories and money trails. And again, I tend to do the softer stories, you know, the quieter stories. I'm very happy, for instance, that they allowed me to do the Margaret Court story, because
mm-hmm.
We haven't had that many. We haven't had that many tennis stories on air, but I like to. There have been so many remarkable stories. The nice thing about HBO Real Sports with Brian Gumbel is there's no commercials. It's an hour-long show. There's no commercials. We only tell three, maybe four stories. So it's layered. It's textured. It's patient.
Yeah.
You get to tell a story, and you get to explain all of it and all the different parts of it.
All right, explain playing with John McEnroe to win a French Open mixed doubles title, which people don't realize, Mary.
Grand Slam.
You are a Grand Slam champion.
We know that he told you
get out of the way kind of thing, but
yes.
give me one or two fun, because you grew up with John.
I grew up with John. We grew up a couple of blocks away from each other
in
a very
who
pretty town.
Who recruited who for this mixed doubles partnership?
We grew up in a sweet little town in Queens, New York called Douglaston. And we played together. I mean, when we were kids, we'd play 14 sets a day. I mean, the courts were pretty empty.
Yeah.
And then
Community
once John
tennis.
Became John McEnroe, all of a sudden tennis, getting a court at the Douglas Club was a lot harder. But I mean, I was also the
I swam for the Douglas and Club team. I bowled every Saturday morning for the Douglas and Club. I mean, that was whole life.
What do you mean bowled?
Bowling.
Lawn bowls.
Lawn bowls? It was indoors.
Lawn bowls. Oh,
bowling.
Indoor bowling.
Indoor bowling.
Come on.
I worked at the snack bar. I was a waitress at the Douglas and Club.
Wow.
I mean, I used to wait on the McEnroes, you know. So this was my whole life. And so John and I think I've told you this story, Stubbsy. We were playing one day.
Renee. It's Renee.
Oh, sorry, Renee. Oh, forgive me.
On this podcast, it's Renee.
Okay, fine. I can work with that.
Joking.
So anyway, Stubbsy, I was hit. We John and I played. I was probably 10, and he was 8. And I used to be able to hang with him for a while, and then all of a sudden one day,
he kicked your ass.
He knocked me down, We're drinking water out of tennis cans. Remember when we used to do that? Mm-hmm, out of the metal tennis cans?
You have to worry about the ball fluff.
Yeah, exactly.
Get rid of the ball fluff.
And I said to John, you are going to be the greatest tennis player in the world one day. And he said to me, that was my first ever commentary and my first ever review. He said, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about. We both love Labor because we were both lefties and Labor was our guy at the time. So that's how far back John and I go. So we decide, John is an amateur at this 1977 French Open. He's there to play the junior event.
Oh, my God.
And the USGA had given him, he was skipping his last month of high school. The USGA gave
Explains
him...
Explains a lot.
The USGA gave him $500 for the entire swing of French Open and Wimbledon.
Oh, my God.
So he was staying in some incredible dumps. We were eating, and it was my, rookie year, so I had no money either. And so we decided to sign up. It was during the team tennis day, so a lot of good players weren't there.
Yeah.
So we sign up for the mix, and John is looking over the mixed doubles list and said, oh, God, we're going to win this thing. I said, what the hell are you talking about? Where are you going to win this? Yeah. Never
How
won
old
anything.
Were you? How old
were you? I was 20 and he was 18.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then we end up winning it because basically I was puking on my shoes by the final, and he said, just kick the ball over on your serve and I'll do the rest. Which is pretty much, that was our strategy, and it was a winning strategy.
What was match point? Do you remember it?
I have no idea.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. I don't remember anything about my professional career. But then, so now we win the French Open.
Oh, now you think you're the shit.
No, I know I'm not, but I know he is. So we come here to Wimbledon, and, you know, John is figuring, all right, we can win Wimbledon. What the hell? We get to the quarters. John, this is the year that John goes through the qualies and gets himself to the semis before losing to Jimmy Connors. And our other great friend from childhood, we all grew up in Queens, Vitas Gerulaitis, was in the other semi against Borg. So John loses to Connors, and now Vitas is going to play Borg. And John did, Connors intimidated him. It was the first time he'd ever played, and he was upset because he'd been playing well to get to the semis. So now, instead of us watching Vitas play Borg, we've got to play our quarterfinal mixed doubles match over on court 2 against Dennis Rawson and Martina Navratilova.
Oh, my God. No big deal.
No big deal.
And we end up, my knees were already shot. I had
20?
Yeah. I'm telling you, I'd run out of them in my teens. So I had a brace on my leg, and at 8 all in the third set, Dennis Rawson, and I hit some ridiculous shot to try to get in on. And he nails me in the knee, in my bad knee, and I go down.
How dare he?
And John... I had already dragged John McEnroe to a Christian meeting that my friend Betsy Nagelson, they could already see that John needed some...
guidance.
we had to bring him into the world of Christendom somehow. So I had dragged him early at Wimbledon to... and Dennis Rawson spoke, and Stan Smith spoke, and Betsy Nagelson spoke. There used to be this whole community of religious players. So I had dragged him there. He was not happy.
Was that started by Margaret? I'm just kidding.
No. But so now it's 8-0, and Dennis Rawson, who we'd heard speak a week earlier, gets me in the knee, and I go down.
Drills you.
And it's kind of late. You know, it's kind of slippery, juicy courts, whatever. And John looks over the net, and first he says, are you okay? And I was. I was just... but he said, he points to Dennis and says, and he calls himself a Christian? And for the next 2 games, 8-0 in the third, we're on our way to the semis of Wimbledon. And for the next 2, all he tries to do is headhunt Dennis Rawson.
That's all he cared about.
And we missed out on the Borg Vitas.
So you lost and you lost.
It was
a bad day.
And he had lost in the singles. Yeah.
Jesus.
Anyway, so that's my story.
That's incredible. That actually is very redeeming for John.
You think so?
In that one moment.
In that one moment.
Yes, actually.
In that one shining moment. Play the music.
A little bit, yes.
Can you add music to this podcast?
This is when the
Swelling. There we go.
When the one shining moment comes in.
Aaron Copland, Fanfare for the Common Man.
Just when everyone thought John was just all about himself.
John was amazing. He was amazing. Yeah, and then he became John McEnroe, and I went back to
and
being
you quit.
Mary Carolla. Yeah.
And then you became
retired.
Legendary Mary Carolla.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, there's so many stories we could tell. This could be an unusually long podcast. Okay.
Renee, philosopher that she is, servant volley. You can tell a lot about a person by the way they play tennis.
I think so.
What I was trying to get to earlier is servant volley as a personality type.
Yes.
Explain that to people.
I think, here's my theory, another half-baked theory.
We love theories. We certainly love Carillo's.
Oh, absolutely.
I hope everyone's writing this down.
I happen to like, I think if you are a servant volleyer, it means that you want to create, you want to instigate, you want to be in charge of the point one way or another.
Or your ground strokes suck, but carry on.
Well, that's the subtext.
Anyway, carry on. Let me color it in for you. This is what we do.
My favorite announcers are servant volleyers. I think if you have played the game from the baseline, you'll probably call matches from the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like serve and volley
you
announcers.
You live life from the baseline, maybe.
You go side to side.
That is a broad generalization, which is something I traffic in a great deal.
And you go side to side, not up, down, and side to side.
No, but right. I think it works as an analogy for life.
I think
are
it does.
Are you somebody who wants the ball? Are you somebody who wants
give me the ball.
Give me the ball.
Let's get this going here. What do you think, Stubbs?
Well, I'm gonna save all the people that are listening to this that run side to side and think, well, what about me? I said, well, there's the one that say, I want the ball and I want it earlier. And then there's the ones that say, I want the ball and I want it to come back and I'm going to get it
That's
back.
Fine, too.
So there's, you know.
No judgment.
No. It
judgment.
Is not fine. Servant volleys are the best. Mary Carolla said right. so. End the podcast.
All right, no, we're going to end the podcast on this.
All right,
the
go ahead.
Three of us are servant volleys with one-handed backhands, now that you've discovered your one-handed backhand, Caitlin.
And I discovered it so much earlier. There's never been
a serve and volley, a one-handed lefty that I love more
than
Mary Carolla.
Thank you.
As a human being. No, on a serious note, Mary. Mary has literally been the biggest champion of mine to get into broadcasting than there ever has been. She literally would go into the production trucks at ESPN back in the day, and they'd ask her, what do you think? We need someone. You know, is there any player? She's like, she'd just call me up and go, let's go. Renee Stubbs. And she would literally, like, without anybody hearing me or knowing anything about me, would grab me and had me go and do matches with her on ESPN, and has pushed me, got me the job at NBC for the Olympics. She's just been my biggest champion, and there's not many people that I love, seriously, more in my professional life than this woman sitting next to me.
Okay, that's
no, it's true.
Incredibly generous and
kind,
but
so
the other part of that is that I want to sit next to her calling a match. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want it to be smart and quick and thoughtful and in the weeds. I mean, I'm doing it selfishly, Stubbs. I mean, it's not like I'm fond of you or anything. I mean, clearly,
good to know.
That's
you're off the Christmas list.
And she calls herself a Christian.
She calls herself a Christian.
Do you know how I feel about you? I'm enjoying your podcast. Caitlin, I'm enjoying this podcast.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Please
come
back.
It's still in diapers, right?
It's still in diapers.
Yeah, but it's
we're not sure what's in the diaper.
Could be bad, could be good. Doesn't matter. We're having fun.
We think it could be mixed on this.
Can I just say something about tennis and life in general? Fun is a good thing to have.
Agreed.
You know what Kim Clijsters said?
It's the only thing to have, right?
On our podcast?
What's the point?
Her biggest word in tennis. No, no. Leave it.
Okay.
Her biggest word in tennis and life for her is passion.
Mm.
And if you want to be good at something, you have to have passion, whether it's being a professional tennis player or whatever else. And there is no doubt that the single most passionate person in tennis when it comes to broadcasting and showing the best production is you, Mary Carolla.
Oh,
and so that is so... It's
I hope we get to work together
it's truly
again
another
before
reason.
We die. That would be nice.
Hurry up. But it truly, that's the biggest thing about you. It's passion every day. Comes into the production meetings, comes at the tennis courts. It's always about what can we put out as a tennis broadcast or real sports or whatever it is. It's passionate. And that is, you live and die by that. And Mary, you will live forever because of your passion in this sport.
Wow.
Last thing said.
Thank you.
We're out.
And that's it for this episode of the Racquet Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri, Taylor Dalton, and the team at Acast. Find us at racquetmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.